This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It's Thursday, December 6th to be exact. And if it's Thursday, that means we must be having another Thursday conversation. Today's guest is somebody that that we've spoken with a number of times over the last decade. And he's fought the fight, and continues to crank out just fantastic information at his site, srsroccoreport.com. And we're talking, of course, about Steve Santangelo. He's a longtime friend of TFMR and someone whose contributions have been invaluable over the years in looking at the metals, the miners, the energy market, you name it. And so with everything going on in the world, particularly in energy too, I thought what a great time to bring Steve in for a Thursday conversation. So Steve, thank you very much for spending a few minutes with me.
Yeah, it's been a long time, Greg, and a lot going in the markets. What's interesting, even though the markets are selling off today, gold was actually up. It's up a little bit. Silver's not down much at all. So the metals are holding up relatively well compared to the overall markets.
You know, before we get started, Steve, for anybody that I guess that maybe doesn't know about you or know about your site, just tell everybody about your site, where people can find it and how it works.
Okay, yeah, I've been running the srsroccoreport.com site, and I also have the SRS Rock Report YouTube channel where I put out videos, and there's a lot of good analysis in those videos. I put out about two or three articles a week, and mainly I focus on how energy impacts the markets and the overall economy, and especially the precious metals. And the reason why I'm a big believer now in the precious metals has to do with the energy. I believe if you understand the energy, that's a number one reason why you should be a big believer in investing and holding in precious metals. So that's what we do over there at the srsroccoreport.com site.
Well, I encourage everybody to check it out, no doubt about it. And like I said, it's more than just that. I mean, I think you've always had consistently understood how things trade in the metals, what's important, and you put out great information. So again, everybody check it out, srsroccoreport.com. Steve, I mentioned at the beginning, I thought, well, one, it just seems crazy. It's been so long since we've spoken, but this has been such a wild year that, you know, everybody's just so busy trying to keep track of all the different things and every which way things are going. But one thing that's been, I guess, heading south over the last, I don't know, 6-8 weeks is crude oil. There are a lot of implications for a falling crude oil price, not the least of which is, you know, just general inflation and what it might mean to Fed policy and everything else to have crude oil go from 76 to 50, which is about at least 30% decline over the course of 6-8 weeks. You analyze this, and I know energy and crude oil and shale is a big part of what you do. Let's start there. What the hell's going on, Steve? Why is price crashing like this?
Well, I just put out a new video on my YouTube channel. It's about gold, silver, the markets, what happens in 2019. And I do show the monthly chart and a weekly chart of the oil price and what's happened, and also a long 20-year chart showing there's this down triangle. There's this since I think oil hit 145 in 2008. It's coming down this triangle line, and it hit $77, and it hit that line again, and it's dropped down to 50. Now the problem is, while West Texas oil is down from 77 and it's trading at 51 today, it's down like 25-30%. What's worse is the tar sands was down to $11. It was down nearly 80%. Whoa. And now the Bakken, which is Williston sweet oil that comes out of the North Dakota, that was down to 39. I just looked at it recently. It's down to 32. And so the shale oil and the tar sands are much lower than the regular price. And this is bad news because the unconventional is much more expensive to produce. And there's so much debt now. I mentioned this. There is $300 billion now in debt in the shale energy industry. Oh. Over the last 10 years, Craig, we've added about 10 billion barrels of oil. We've produced 10 billion barrels of shale oil, but we've added 30 billion in debt to produce that 10 billion barrels. Now, interesting, to pay off the debt on the balance sheets, these companies have to produce 9 billion barrels just to pay off their debt, which is never going to happen. So I think what's going to happen now, we're going to see lower oil prices over the next quarter, especially the winter. This is a slower winter driver months. So I think we're going to see a lot more pressure on the unconventional tar sands and shale oil, and that's bad for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I mean, as that ripples through, you're going to have all kinds of defaults on those debt obligations of these companies. And, I mean, how does that not ultimately impact all the broader markets, the economy, everything else?
Well, you know, years ago when conventional, and still, there are guys who still produce conventional oil. The return on investment is like 30, 40 to 1, as well as the energy return on investment. It's still pretty high. There's just not many wells out there to find, but they're still finding a few. And so when they produced this oil, it was very profitable. And it was a good boost to the economy. Everybody was paid. Nobody went in debt. Now with the shale, it's been the exact opposite. There's a lot of energy that goes into producing this. And it's not just energy. It's labor. It's pipe. It's fracking sand. Some of these Permian wells now are pumping in 24 million pounds of sand. It's the 60, 70 stage fracks. And they're pumping in 24 million pounds of sand to get this oil. And so it's very expensive. So when the oil price falls, well, that doesn't become economic. And then you have to start laying people off. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see a lot of damage to the Texas economy if oil prices continue to fall.
Yeah, that ripples through. I remember reading, now that you mentioned sand, the sand market is phenomenal. And there are a certain kind of sand that's like extremely important, and there's a big market for it. And so I read something like that, it seems.
Yeah, well, they were importing or transporting most of that fracking sand from Michigan. It's a white sand. It's a special sand to frack the wells. But they were producing so many wells in the Permian in Eagle Ford that they started mining the sand in Texas. It's not as good quality, but yes, I mean, it's not only the sand, it's the water, it's the pipe. There's just so much more cost. So I believe I'm one of the few that when the shale oil industry starts to fall apart, and I see that happening within the next year or two, that is going to really start to pull down the U.S. economy, much like the housing market, the housing bubble pulled down the U.S. economy back in 2008.
Yeah. I mining sand and the water sounds like something on Tatooine, doesn't it? It's like Luke Skywalker had to go clear up the sand mines before he could have dinner.
Yeah, you know, if you go and look at some of these, look at the activity that's taking place, it's funny. You had a handful of guys working on a conventional well and had all this oil that came out. Now you've got a massive amount of people and trucks and equipment just to produce this oil. So I really believe it's a net energy loser, but it's filled in the gap. I mean, we've added about almost 7 million barrels of this stuff a day since 2008.
Wow. Well, again, there's just another headwind that the U.S. economy is going to have to deal with that nobody's really anticipating or looking forward to next year, that the Fed is going to have to take into account as they adjust their policy. And let's just put that log on the fire. That's only just going to make it more difficult. In terms of the mining industry, I think most people are familiar that, as a general statement, the biggest input cost for a gold or silver miner is energy, is diesel or some other type of energy input. And here you're seeing crude oil fall by 30%. You know, Steve, I know from company to company, the all-in sustaining costs vary, and we try to generalize that across the industry, you know, and try to see if there's a price beyond which that digital price doesn't fall, because you start getting into the, you know, point where it costs more to get it out of the ground than it does to sell it, so why do it? $1,200 gold is held as a level like that now for 4 years, as has about $14 silver. With declining energy costs, though, could the, maybe not the cost of production fall, but could the earnings of some of these companies increase to the point where institutional money starts to look at the sector because they see earnings growth?
I can answer that in two ways. First of all, it is important to understand this. When I was looking at Barrick and Newmont, the two largest gold producers, when the oil price was trading at $41 in 2004, it cost Barrick and Newmont $366 to produce an ounce of gold. And the market price was about $400. So they're making a little bit of profit. The oil price went up. Over the next 10 years, the gold price went up, then it peaked and declined. Now, when the oil price went from 110 and it went down and it hit, it actually went back and it hit 30 in 2016, mm-hmm. but the average was $43, only a couple of dollars more than it was in 2004. Do you know the price for Barrick and Newmont to produce gold in 2016 had tripled to about $1,125 an ounce? Yeah. So even though the oil price had fallen considerably, only a couple bucks more than it was in 2004, the falling ore grades, the falling energy return on investment, and inflation that goes throughout the whole system, not just energy, it's labor costs have gone up, capital costs have gone up. I don't see, even if the price of oil fell to 40 or 30, it could lower the gold mining cost a little bit. We could see it maybe down to 1,100, 1,050, but that's if the oil price crashes to that low. Now, if the oil price starts to get that low, then it starts pulling down the whole economy and asset prices. And this is where I differ in why people see the gold price continue to fall. When asset prices fall, the debt bubble bursts. There's not much really out there to invest in. So I see a disconnect. I see the markets continuing to sell off, but people moving into gold and silver to protect their wealth. And Craig, this happened in October. We had 2 days where the Dow fell 2,000 points. Gold went up $50 those 2 days. It didn't fall with the Dow Jones. Right. So I see a disconnect taking place once fear really starts to move in the markets.
You know, I've spoken to a lot of people, especially over the last, gosh, was maybe 60 days ago, when in the last earnings summary, and Goldcorp and Barrick and Agnico Eagle and all these majors just got crushed, because they're just not making any money, and so many of those majors, as you know, Steve, I mean they do the dance of death with the bullion banks and sell their production forward and hedge and try to get financing from the banks and all this stuff when they're just killing themselves. And the management seems oblivious to understanding this. Do you think, I guess, my question is, as an aside, a lot of folks have told me that's why they don't even jack around with the seniors. That if you think the metal prices are going to rally next year, do you have a feeling? Is it more about the juniors and the exploration companies rather than messing around with Goldcorp?
That's a tough question. Now, Goldcorp, it was hurt more than the others because Goldcorp, like its Penasquito mine, it produces a lot of base metal as well as silver. And those two have not held up well. Base metals and silver has not held up as well as gold. Whereas Barrick and Newmont, I think Newmont is still, that's why their stock is so high. Newmont is produced, their break even is like $11.45. Barrick is a little bit is higher. At Goldcorp got hurt because they have so much more silver and base metal byproduct production. But this is how I see it. The debt is being propped up. In the first three quarters of this year, the U.S. government added $1 trillion in debt. U.S. GDP went up about $823 billion. So we're just propping up the GDP with debt. Yeah. So it's stocks and it's real estate. Everything's being propped up by debt. Well, gold and silver are not being propped up by debt. So I think when the precious metals start to correct and move higher, they're going to take the miners with them.
Yeah.
And I've got this. This is going to sound crazy. I think the gold miners, the silver miners, and I'm not talking the juniors, they could go. But I think these gold and silver miners, there's not many of them, the good quality ones, they could be trading like Amazon in the future because you don't want to be in Amazon if the economy starts to roll over due to the energy. You don't want to be in Amazon. You don't want to be in Netflix and all these highly overvalued FANG stocks. So to me, I see a rotation out of those and into the miners, because the miners are still at their lows. You could tell me that they're still at their lows.
Yeah, it's like that old presentation from a couple of years ago, Grant Williams, about nobody cares. And how, if you might recall, he pointed out the percentage ownership, institutional ownership, pension fund ownership in gold and the miners was like 0.15%. And if it just simply doubled to 0.3%, it would represent enough money to buy the entire GDX and all the GDXJ. And I mean, it won't take much recognition just to turn them and get them moving higher again. But to wrap up the other, I guess the other point though, that I just want to make sure that I understood you. You don't really think, at least at this point, that lower crude oil costs significantly at this point impact the cost of production much?
Well, that's a good point. In the third quarter, the miners were hurt because the gold price had kind of trended lower, and the oil price was the highest in all three quarters. The oil price hit 77, and so it was the highest in the third quarter. So that did impact their overall profitability. But now this quarter, gold has kind of remained above what it was, and the prices of oil has sold off. So I think there's going to be some more breathing room for the gold miners. Yes, I think the costs will be less in the fourth quarter, but I'm looking more towards the longer term. And really, you know, when you see the Dow Jones trading at 24,000, a lot of these stocks are very overvalued. To me, the miners and the silver miners and the precious metals are really the only few places that are I see investors and day traders, swing traders, investors, hedge funds, institutions. Nobody cares about the metals now.
All right.
But when they start to care about the metals, like you said, it won't take much to push their prices up. And so, yes, I do believe that the costs are going to be a little bit less in the fourth quarter. But I do believe we're going to see a turnaround in the metals in 2019.
Yeah. All right, Steve, I guess our last topic I wanted to ask you about, another thing I've always counted on you for over the years is your analysis of physical metal demand, not just at the sovereign level or the institutional level, but all the way down to the retail level. It's one of those things that even I got to admit, I've kind of dropped the ball on over the last few years. You know, it was something I used to watch, the sales of the U.S. Mint and stuff like that. I would assume you're still paying attention to this, though. What have you seen this year? Is retail demand falling back, to where it was in 2007? Is everybody that's going to buy some has already bought some? Do you have any generalizations you can make?
Well, that's interesting. Ever since the 2008 economic housing and investment banking crisis, silver coin and bar demand were about between 55 and 60 million ounces a year. And then once the silver price shot up after there was the crisis, it really increased. Now, it hit a high of 292 million ounces silver coin and bar demand in 2015. Now, that was mainly due to a sell-off in the price.
Yeah.
So, but even though demand has fallen, total silver coin and bar demand has fallen to 125 million ounces. That's what they're forecasting this year. That's Silver Eagles. That's Canadian Maples. It's down from 142. It's still 2.5 times what it was prior to the 2008 economic crisis. So even though it's lower than it's about, let's say, half of what it was in 2011, 12, 13, and 14, it's still more than double prior to the economic crisis. And I do believe when the market turns around, we're going to see that. But to me, the demand for the price movement of silver will not be physical. The price movement for silver will be paper. That will push the price of silver higher. Now, physical demand will come and add on to it. But when the retail market is the biggest market in the world, the retail market, and that's the paper market. Mm-hmm. When they get into the silver and gold prices, they will push them up to new highs, and then we'll start seeing more demand come in, yeah. Physical demand.
Yeah, like 2011. I mean, you had to get that paper price moving first, and then, you know, that's the what makes headlines, and then people go out and they buy themselves some Eagles and that kind of thing. It's definitely going to take higher prices. Are there certain levels that you've been watching? You had sent me a chart earlier in gold with some of the long-term moving averages on it. Do you watch that much, Steve? Are there certain goals that you have in mind that you think, if should we cross this level, it's going to be a really good sign going forward?
Well, you see, I think right now there's this 1235, 1240 price, and that seems to be between about 1200 is where I find the long-term support for gold is about $1,200. And so it could go below that, it could go above it, but I think when the market starts to unravel, when we start getting above 1250, 1260s, and even let's say 1270, that's when I think we're going to start seeing move back up to the 1300 level. And now that will happen if the gold ETF demand was positive so far this year. But when the markets sell off, the indicator for gold and silver is the fear in the market. Mm. And I believe it's not going to be industrial demand. It's going to be retail demand, and it's going to be when the markets really start to sell off and when investors start moving into the gold ETF. And I don't care if the gold's there or not, but they're going to push the price of gold up. And so I think once we start getting above 1250 and 1260, as the markets start to sell off, I think it could get crazy with the gold and silver price.
Yeah, it kind of echoes my thoughts, actually, Steve. As the market participants begin to realize that the Fed's not going to hike four times next year, and the U.S. economy isn't going to be growing next year, and you've got all these other risks that are out there, from Deutsche Bank to GE to Brexit to you name it, all of a sudden, people start looking around and going, oh, wait a second, maybe the Fed's not going to be tightening. In fact, maybe the Fed's going to start easing. As that gets worked in, you're right. I mean, it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, at the end of the day, Steve, you go back to 2015. I mean, that's kind of what this feels like to me. It's like 3 years ago all over again. And nobody, I mean, I was screaming at people that prices weren't going to go lower in 16 when everybody was saying it was going to 700 in gold. And so therefore, you know, nobody was buying. We get into January and prices moving higher, and you get into February and everything starts to cook. And suddenly nobody wanted to get in until all of a sudden gold was already $1,300, you know, and the Hui was already at 250. And so the key, I would say, is visiting the SRS Rocco report, doing your own homework, looking over the horizon, obviously, to maybe what you see individually is coming rather than what Goldman Sachs tells you is going to happen, and then start taking steps for that now. Steve, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a very interesting year next year. We're going to have to speak more frequently, I think.
Yeah, and you know, there's always the chance, and people ask me, what happens if oil does go down to 40, 30, even in 20s, if it happens? Well, that could make the cost of production less, so we could see lower gold and silver prices. But you see, I think what's fascinating, when gold was trading at about 1245 in October, and then the oil price fell, it fell kind of with the oil price, and so did silver. But the oil prices continue to fall, mm-hmm. but gold especially has gone from 1200 to 1240. So we're seeing kind of it's moving away from the oil price. And again, there's not a lot of people interested in gold. And so when you start getting that interest, even though we could see lower prices in the beginning of next year, I'm not saying we will, but it's possible if we get lower oil prices, you have to look at the fundamentals of the market, and the market is not is in serious trouble. And so if I agree, there's not really much out there to protect wealth. And so when the markets roll over, I think gold and silver are going to surprise a lot of people.
Let's hope so. We don't want another year like this one. This has been no fun.
Agreed.
My goodness. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time. Just your insights are always so valuable. And again, we want everybody to go check out SRS Rocco Report. It should be on your favorites list. It's something you should be regularly checking, that's for sure, for the great information that Steve puts out. And Steve, like I said, we're going to have to keep in touch and visit again in the new year and see how things are going.
That'd be great. Thanks so much for the time.
And again, thanks to you. And thanks to everybody for listening. We'll talk to you again with another Thursday conversation next week.